This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Welcome to another episode of Hashtag Politrix with Botsang Modimowame Moilwa. It's been a week of, if it wasn't monkey pox, it was political monkey tricks. Guru, what on earth is happening this week?
It's monkeys all the way. Monkey pox, monkey tricks.
You know when you think that last week was a lit week, the following week says, yeah, hold my beer. And Kenya right now is on fire. What I'm loving about what's happening in Kenya is that it's being led by young people saying, no, this is not going to happen. You're not going to just pass a bill, Jay, and tax everyone and burden all of us.
Well, Fresh, good morning. Morning. You know, we didn't even greet the viewers.
Yes, good morning and welcome.
Yeah. Listen, Tato, where do we start? Let's start with Kenya, since you have raised that one. But do you know why it's the youth in Kenya?
Mm.
One president, is it William Ruto?
Ruto, yes.
When he came into power, we would recall that Kenya elections went on almost 50-50.
Sure.
You know, they won with like 1%.
Mm.
So it was not an outright majority.
Sure.
But he rallied the youth. The youth rallied behind Ruto because, if you recall, one of the things is that he campaigned by talking about his child as a youth, his you know, childhood during his youth days, how he used to be a street seller, and he funded his education. So he appealed to the youth of the country.
Mm.
And he had promised that more than anybody else is going to take care of the youth because of, you know, same situation in South Africa, high unemployment and youth roaming up the streets. And drugs are, you know, usage of drugs among youth is becoming bigger and bigger in Kenya.
Mm.
Now, the youth are leading the revolution in Kenya. And I call it a revolution because they are protesting about him failing to deliver on his promises.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of it, me and you, we have praised Ruto once or twice in our show.
He made the right noises at the right time.
And a friend of mine said to me last week, you must never listen to what they say.
Mm.
You must look at what they do.
Yes,
understand?
Sir.
He made the right noises, anti-imperialism and all that.
Mm.
Now, this man goes and then
took a private jet to America.
Yeah, a private jet. But did you see, there's a video that actually angered the Kenyans.
Yeah.
Where he said cabinet people and ministers and his, you know, presidency, they wanted to pay 70 million shillings for a private jet. And he said to them, no, if that's the case, book me on Kenya Airways,
exactly,
you know, to go there. But he still said no. After that, they approached him, and this is where this whole thing started. They approached him and they said, the funders and the friends, he calls them friends, will give you one for 10 million shillings. That's $1 million.
Mm.
So he paid $1 million to fly to the US to go and meet Biden, who is getting out of power, who's busy with his elections there. And then he came back with policies, and they were drafting policies that are revisiting taxes. Now, you had a plan to empower the youth. Now you are raising taxes that are actually affecting families because even they still use GST, you know, the general sales tax to increase that. And that's where the youth went on rampage. But Fresh, we have to condemn that in Kenya at this day age, the police are shooting and killing children, you know, as protesters.
Mm.
I mean, some of the victims, almost 20 people have been killed at the moment, and some of the victims are as young as 8 years old.
Mm.
What can an 8-year-old, whether it's a stray bullet or what, why use live ammunition for protesters?
Mm.
But something very interesting that happened, you know, this colonial instrument. Maybe you even know the history to it. I don't know, I just call it the colonial instrument. The mace, is it called the mace that they carry in parliament? That thing that looks like a torch.
Oh, yes.
It's called the mace, I think so. You know that, what does it mean?
Mm.
If it's removed from parliament, parliament can't sit. If it's not there,
parliament
can't sit. One of the youth members, when they walked into parliament, he actually took the mace, repossession. And you know what I said? Actually, the mace belonged to the people because the parliament belongs to the people.
Mm.
So the people have taken the mace. And that boy, there's a photo of a very young boy, I think age 16, 17, walking out of parliament with the mace.
Mm.
And it's made of solid gold. So he probably doesn't know its significance, but he took it for its value. value. So the parliament in Kenya, normal kanjani, it cannot sit because the maize is nowhere to be found. It is in the hands of the people. The people have repossessed the maize.
But obviously something has got to give. What do you think is going to happen next in Kenya? Do you think they're going to go back on this new bill? Because they need to raise money either way.
Look, Fresh, you spent millions in flying to visit your old friend Biden and you want to raise taxes. He has to give in because the people won't back off. Mm. And I said, the bill has not been signed into law by the president. Mm. I don't think he will sign it. If he signs it, he will be very arrogant. But also signing it, it's putting him at a risk because Raila Odinga is up now. Yes. Odinga is up talking and say, I've told you this is not the right man for the position. He sold you lies and look at him, he's not even halfway his term in power. Mm. He's already going back to what he promised. So it will be very risky for him to cancel it. One, the protests will not stop. And you know, Kenyan people are very civil people. They are also very kind people. But coming from the history of the Mau Mau,
I was going to say,
they are fighters. If they start fighting, they don't stop.
But since the Mau Mau rebellion,
generally
Kenya has been cruising.
It's a very peaceful people. It's a very peaceful country. But you don't start with them. You remember also when the transitional government from before Odinga, it was the founder president's son.
Oh, yes, it's Kenyatta.
When Kenyatta, the transition from between Kenyatta and Odinga, there were protests that time that really rattled the country. But generally, it's a very peaceful country. I think the president, for the benefit of the people, let him act as a leader of the people and stop this tax bill and focus on rebuilding the country and developing the economy.
Let's go back to the Arab Spring. Because when the Arab Spring happened, it literally started as a fire nyana.
Youth protest here. Yeah.
And then it just spread.
Mushroomed all over Middle East and North Africa.
Looking at what's happening in Kenya, do you think it could in any way influence youth in any other country, maybe on the continent?
I doubt it.
Is it isolated?
Look, the East African community, it's a very stable, you know, domestically, if you look at the countries there, maybe Uganda to some extent, but Tanzania is a very stable, quiet country. Rwanda is a very stable country. And you see the presidents or the leaders or governments of Rwanda and Uganda, they are ruling with an iron fist.
Sure.
So it will be very difficult for youth. And also, I don't think there's issues happening there that impact on youth directly as much as it's happening in Kenya. But I don't think it will spread into the region. And in South Africa, we've got bigger problems than Kenya. Our youth are in a worse situation than Kenya, but they are also marginalized. Me and you, we are not youth, but we can't even stand up and protest. So imagine who will be guiding the youth. Having an unguided revolution is very dangerous.
I think you must speak for yourself. I am still youth. I am senior youth, but I am still youth.
Is there something like that?
There's a senior youth.
You will
stop youth.
Contesting for parliamentary position and like you'll become like ANC guys who are saying, we have deployed the young people there between 55 and 59 and they call them young people. Don't start.
Yeah, when your average age of your parliamentarians is 40s and 50s, then there's a problem.
40s and 50s, no, it's not a problem. It's better than the previous one. No, much better. It's much better. Now, we've seen Patriotic Alliance has brought youngsters, and so it's much better. Now, we are getting there.
We're getting fewer and fewer retirees, which is not a bad thing.
Exactly.
In fact, we've brought it home, so let's actually go there. This week, the MK MPs finally sworn in. There's now an official opposition.
Yes.
And obviously, there's also names in there that are of interest. Do we say impeached or do we say disgraced President Shoppe?
That's I will not use the word disgraced. Okay. They impeached.
But you know, isn't it impeachment and disgrace though?
Look, Fresh, disgrace is a media language that's been used formally in government
processes. So it's dramatic. It's dramatic.
You know, why would they say a person is a disgrace? It's a media. It's what is being used in the media. But formally, for officially, it's an impeached judge. There was actually a debate this week in social media to say, do you still address him as Justice Shoppe? Do you lose the title when you have been impeached?
Isn't he also a doctor?
Yes, he's got a doctorate in law.
Exactly. So yeah, he'd be Dr. Hlophe now.
Dr. Honorable MP Justice Hlophe. There's so many titles in there. But yeah, the MK MPs are now sworn in as MPs. As you said, there's interesting names, but there's something also very interesting that they did.
Mm.
You see, we don't realize the strategy of these people. And every time they do something, I laugh. There's two things that happened yesterday.
Mm.
It gave them an opportunity to have the media focusing on them and them only.
So
that's the benefit. They could go and relate their plan in parliament. They could go and say, we are now the official opposition of the country. And I'm glad you have mentioned it, because people will not understand why are we referring to them as official opposition. Because the Democratic Alliance that was supposed to be the official opposition is now part of the government.
Mm.
So the MK becomes the official opposition. That's one. Two, they had all the media coverage to themselves, to an extent that something very nasty, but I observed such little things. When they were having a media briefing, remember a week before what happened when ENCA, the TV channel, sanctioned or repressed the show, the you know, airing of the show by Dr. J.J. Tabane interviewing.
Yes. Mm.
And they were boycotting MK press, you know, briefings. Now, what they did, which is very nasty, was to sneak in a microphone of ENCA, but it didn't have the logo. They removed the logo, and Nhlamulo, the spokesperson, said, ENCA, it's good. I can see you don't have to sneak your microphone in. We are welcoming you.
Sure.
We need people to hear. That's another element. But during that briefing, something very critical also fresh that people may have missed on Tuesday. The day these people went in for swearing in parliament, it was also a D-Day on Tuesday at 5 p.m. for the respondent in the electoral case to respond.
Okay.
So all happened on the same day. And while people were focusing on who are the members on that list, the media and everybody has lost focus that on Tuesday at 5 p.m., it was a D-Day for over 100 respondents, because it's over 100 respondents on that case.
Mm.
It's the president, the IEC, justice, all political parties in government, all political parties that contested elections, and even those that lost, and all independent candidates. They are the respondents in that case. I wonder how many responded.
Mm.
I haven't checked, but that was very interesting. With regard to the interesting names, who are interesting? Who's interesting? Who are you there?
For instance, Andy Lentlik-Tama is on there. I mean, obviously, he was expelled from the EFF.
Yes.
And we know his position on the land issue.
Yes.
And he's still very, very unapologetic about it, that on the table is the land.
Yeah.
And we will not stop until something happens.
Yeah.
So for me, that's an interesting name to see on the list. Impeached public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane's husband,
yes,
is also in there. And she was there to support at the swearing in.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I like this marriage of former ANC people.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.
Mm.
I did not know. I knew that Advocate Mkhwebane's husband,
yes,
is a member of MK.
Mm.
But I did not know that
he's
on the list. I never cared about the list. With Andile, it doesn't surprise me.
Sure.
I was caught by surprise. I knew 2-3 weeks before by Judge Hlophe.
Mm.
But I never thought he will go to an extent of going into parliament. But with Andile, remember, in February this year, we even spoke about it on the show. The Black First Land First issued a statement to say they are not going to contest elections and they are throwing their weight behind Umkhonto we Sizwe. And I see the media and everybody else refers to him as the former president of BLF. That is incorrect. I can tell you, I spoke to Andile last night as well. Andile remains the president of the BLF.
Sure.
Andile remains the leader of the BLF. The BLF didn't dissolve.
Mm.
They just decided to not contest elections and they will run with MK to elections, which I also think, Fresh, it's a very good thing. Many times we spoke, you spoke to Musima Imane about it.
Mm.
Why are we fragmented as black people?
Mm.
We are all over.
Mm. Mm.
And I think that's a good decision for BLF to say, we speak the same language as Umkhonto we Sizwe, therefore let us go and join Umkhonto we Sizwe. They've got the resources, they've got the number, numbers. And I think it will be good to have people like Andile in parliament. It's going to be very interesting. They impeached public protector. They impeached former Western Cape judge president. They dismissed former member of parliament, Andile, sitting on opposition benches.
Sure.
Because the EFF hasn't as well joined the GNU.
And there are sharp minds at that.
They're also sharp minds. They're also very young and sharp minds. So it's going to be very interesting. That Justice Committee is going to be very interesting.
And chances are they're going to be sitting on the same Justice Committee that told them they need to go.
Chances are one of them may actually become even the chairperson of that Justice Committee. So we are going to have a very interesting year of parliament. I think our parliament is going to be much more interesting than cabinet or anything this year. You know, they've started work this week. They've started forming committees. And we have finished a week, you know, and more days without cabinet. And I was thinking last night, do we really need them? We're cruising. We're okay without ministers.
We've been in auto cruise.
We're okay.
In fact, isn't that what President Ramaphosa said the other day?
Yeah.
I think he was interviewed and he mentioned the fact that, you know, things are moving.
Things are moving.
And surely then that speaks to the fact that people have been saying, you don't need a bloated cabinet.
Yes.
The fact that things can automate themselves to a certain extent.
And somebody asked me, but what if there's an executive decision to be made?
Sure.
We have a president.
Exactly.
We can make that decision. We don't need 30 ministers and 34 deputy ministers. You know, I think South Africans and those in parliament, in opposition, they must hold the Democratic Alliance as well as any other party, like they who have been saying the cabinet is bloated.
Sure.
One of the things that they must raise in parliament is to say, but why are you now increasing it more? Why are you keeping it at 30? The GA has been making noise about this for many years, and they must be held accountable. Even their members must start saying, but Helen Zille and Steen Hazen, why are you growing this thing or keeping it at 30? Look, I still say we can reduce our cabinet to between 18 and 20 ministers. We can merge a number of ministries, reduce the cabinet. You must only have less than 10, maybe 5 deputy ministers.
Sure.
And give them powers. Of ministers in absence, amend the constitution because it's the constitution that's denying them the powers. Right now, you know that deputy ministers are at work because they are not members of the executive authority.
Yes.
Understand? Yes. So they are at work with DGs. They are running the departments. They don't have executive powers, but they are at work. So I think the sooner this decision, we don't know. Probably when the viewers will be watching this show, President Ramaphosa would have made a midnight announcement about members of the cabinet.
In fact, speaking of the cabinet, so Zizi Kotwa, a week or two ago, steps down as Minister of Arts and Culture.
Yes, and resigned from Parliament.
And then this week, he is being sworn in as a member of parliament. And he's telling the media that, no, I'm on the list. If I'm on the list, I must be here. But people are saying, but surely that goes against the very principle that you displayed a week or two ago. What are your thoughts on that?
It's unprincipled. And I'm not going to, pardon me, I'm not going to only talk about what Zizi Kwala, because his statement was relatively empty. He said he was in Cape Town to be sworn in, and then there was a family emergency in Joburg that he had to come to Joburg. I'm not buying that story. But I also think it's very cheeky and arrogant of ANC, and I thought the elections humbled them. They seem not to be humbled. You see, the ANC owes us as a nation and as a political party that has been leading in government, and I always say this has been misruling the government. They came to us. They came to the public. We had Bontate Mavuso Msimang. We had the former president, Kgalema Motlanthe, saying, we've got a step-aside rule. It's an adopted policy of the ANC. They have implemented it. They have practiced it. We have seen the likes of Mtate Isma Khashule, the former SG, you know, stepping out, and many others, as recent as before Zizi Kwala, because it happened in the same week, it was the Speaker of Parliament. And as that now, What happened to the step aside rule? Because their rule is very clear to say, once you are charged.
Yes.
Now this guy is charged, has even appeared in court. He's out on bail. You understand? So why is it not applicable? It shows the unprincipled position of the ANC actually. Now, how do people still entrust their political freedom and will in the country into the likes of the African National Congress if they can't even adhere to their own domestic rules and regulations? And again, it shows how undemocratic and unfair they are within the African National Congress. I mean, the man resigned. He defeated the purpose. You resign to say, I'm being charged, I don't want interference, and I'm sticking to the organizational policy. Now, Ntate Mavuso Msimang, Ntate Kgalema Motlanthe, and everybody else, and the 101 stalwarts of the ANC who are talking about cleaning, President Thabo Mbeki, where is he now about that the ANC has been taken by Megodoi, and this Megodoi is, look, I'm quoting him, it's not me calling ANC people Megodoi, it's their president who said that. And what is he saying now that Zizi Kodwa, who was in court in the dock, is now back as and signing as a member of parliament? I mean, this is a circus. Who will take such people serious? I've got nothing against Zizi Kodwa. Actually, it's one of the politicians that I like, that I think he is approachable and all that. There's nothing to do with him. This is a principal discussion. This is a principal talk to say, you have a policy, we have seen you implementing it, and I've always said the purpose of step-aside policy of the ANC was to actually neutralize and marginalize the so-called RET forces that were aligned to Jacob Zuma. And it has become clear. That's why they created that policy for. Because, Fresh, to be honest, if the Zondo Commission gets implemented, half of ANC leaders will have to vacate those positions.
Sure.
And it's not me who's saying that. Mm. It's not me who's saying it's corrupt. It's them when they went to the Zondo gossip platform, because that was a gossip platform. I called the Zondo Commission, I called it a platform where corrupt ANC people were out to point fingers at each other. 99% of the names mentioned for corruption in the Zondo Commission are members of the African National Congress. Somebody may argue and say, yeah, but they were the leading and the ruling party. So if you are leading and ruling, must you be the most corrupt? No, it doesn't. There's a lot of corrupt people outside. I believe there's corrupt people in every political party, in the DA, in general business people and public. But they should have actually sat in Luthuli House with Justice Zondo and say, let's talk who stole how much. Instead of making us pay $2 billion, now the Justice Zondo report is piling up dust. The NPA comes with an excuse that they don't have the resources to can implement. Really? We spent $2 billion to go and gossip, and you don't have the resources to can implement that. And this is the kind of political leaders we don't want. The current parliament must actually go and get that report, the seventh administration. And I think the you know, the EFF and the Umkhonto-Wesizwe and many others will push for that. But we will see if you call it GNU. You know, you're a typical South African. You give names to every abbreviation. The government of national unity will take start. I still doubt if it will fly.
In fact, that was my next question and concern, because now we are at a situation where we need a cabinet appointed, and now there's a back and forth between the ANC and the DA. There's accusations flying back and forth. The DA is saying, you guys didn't win an election, but you want to behave like you're Mr. Party. But you only have 40%, we have 20%. So surely everything should be proportionally divvied out.
Yeah.
That if you have 1% of the parliament, then you must get 1% of the government.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Look, are the DA's demands unreasonable?
Let me scratch my head. Why did you ask me that question?
Let me tell you personally for me.
Yeah.
If Vele, it's a government that's going to be constituted along the lines of, if you won 10%, you are 10% involved,
yeah,
then it's only fair.
Yeah.
That we must demand our 20%. You must demand your 1% if you are 1% in.
It's
shareholding.
If
and because
that
you
is
have
in the agreement, remember, they've got this agreement that Helen Zille and Figile Mbalula signed.
But they don't.
Let's forget DA and ANC. Sure. Let's look at the agreement and let's think as South Africans. Mm. One, there's an agreement, and it means those people sat down and agreed to what they signed to. So I will not say the Democratic Alliance is making unreasonable, because when Helen Zille was interviewed, and many others after, I've listened to Steen Hazen, I've listened to the ANC, Fikile Mbalula and the others, and I've seen a lot of brains in the ANC coming to defend. You there's no need to defend after the effect, post facto, because the document is there. It's either they did not understand it or they are misinterpreting it.
Sure.
You understand? If I look at that document that they signed, the DA has a point to say, let us share the government proportionally according to our votes and our city. And I think it's a fair demand. Where it becomes clumsy and wrong is when the DA says to the ANC, for you to invite other people to the party, to come and share the cake, you need to talk to us. I think the DA is not playing fair there, because there's nowhere in that agreement that says either of them cannot invite people. The DA can go and invite the EFF to say, let's smoke a peace pipe, come and join us, you understand? That I don't agree with the DA. But the other important element is, you were asking about the demands of the DA.
Including, we want specific ministries.
Yes, that's
we want the DGs to be our people, etc., etc. And this is the same party that was campaigning on the back of cadre deployment is wrong.
It's wrong, yes. They are absolutely mad. But that's also absolute madness.
But also, were they saying cadre deployment is wrong, or were they saying the way it has been applied to enrich certain people that is wrong? Because generally in politics, I will work with the people I trust.
It's common cause.
I mean, even when Trump won his presidency, I mean, he had a brain surgeon responsible for housing.
Yes.
Because he trusts him as a Republican. You want to work with the people you know.
That's normal, Flash. I've said it before and I've defended, for example, I'll repeat it again. The day Jacob Zuma appointed Moshaik, as his security advisor, and I said, why wouldn't he? He trusted him more than anybody else.
Yes.
But the DA, I've said it's this absolute madness. Number one, this is the political party that has been talking about the constitution. Mm-hmm. Number one, the constitution of the country gives the president of the republic authority and absolute powers to can appoint cabinet.
Mm.
Even if you have a sideshow agreement, that I said that agreement, it's not a legally binding agreement. It's not constitutional.
Mm.
So whatever is in that agreement cannot supersede. It's a gentleman's agreement, the constitution. That's number one. Two, I don't think you are negotiating in good faith when you say, I deserve 10 ministries. We already said they are right there, based on their numbers. But I want these ministries. You can't enforce, you can't demand. You can say, I listened to the leader of Inkatha Freedom Party in Gauteng, and he was asked if they get one, what do you call it, MEC post in Gauteng under Panyaza Lusufi. Which one? Listen to the question was, which one would you prefer? And he said, any that the premier will give us, however, would prefer human settlements. And I already knew before he even explained why human settlements. And they were right. And he was like, because as the IFP in Gauteng, most of our members are in hostels, which are falling under human settlements. And therefore, we want to deliver to our constituency.
We think
we will deliver better when we do housing. That's common sense, you understand? The DA cannot come, and you must look at their list of the 10 or 11 ministries that they want. It's 11, actually. Number one, they are for finance and, control the economic sector. Then they've got the structural ones that are having the budget of the country, like transport, infrastructure, public works, all the key ministries. Then you go and you make a demand to say, we want deputy president, when you know that there's a thorny issue in the ANC about the deputy president. That's one. Two, you demand that the deputy president is appointed or hired by the president, like ministers. And then you even go to an extent of saying, if you don't give us the deputy president, we are demanding the minister in the presidency. We spoke about it last week. That's a key position. It's like a prime minister of South Africa.
Sure.
Because you manage the performance of other ministers. And then they say, look how smart the DA is. And guys, we have to give them credit where they become smart. Eh? Mm. The DA says, no, finance, it's okay. We don't want it. Mm. We want deputy minister. Do you know why? Mm. The deputy minister of finance is in charge of government business, just like the minister. He's in charge of like the PAC, in government investment, corporations and all that. So the deputy minister of finance actually appoints the board of organizations and SOEs, like the public, you know, investment corporation and things like that. So they actually will be in charge of the entire economy of the country. I don't think the African National Congress is going to agree to that. Mm. I don't think President Ramaphosa will give them all that they want. I think they deserve. Mm. Let them be given a chance. They had 20 to almost 21% of the votes, and they will get ministries. And they are very smart as well. When I did the calculations, they are asking for 11, but according to my bad maths, they are qualifying between 6 and 8. Mm. So you ask for more, knowing that they won't give you 11, they'll give you less.
So you're saying that 20% will give them about 6 to 8 ministries?
6 to 8, yeah, 6 to 8, depending on... Remember, there's also a battle of the interpretation to say, are we going to share with these other kids that are invited to the party? And there's that battle as well.
What do you say to a person who says, but if Botsang becomes a new minister, but has a DG from another party, then we're not going to work together here.
Again, Fresh, remember these people, when you are in a political office, you're a political office bearer, once you take an oath, your party uniform stays outside.
No, you are supposed to be there.
Yeah, but you are supposed to be there to serve the government. These people are talking about for the people of South Africa, for the people of the country, for stability. That's what they are saying. Now, it should not matter. Who's the DG? Sure. Director generals, SOEs, commissioners, or what you call them, the CEOs, they are technocrats. They are professionals in their field. These people have 5-year contracts. They are not linked to a minister like advisors. So why do you want to rattle with that? And also there's another problem. DGs are appointed by the president. There's one thing that people, just like premiers, DGs are not appointed by ministers.
They're not hired by the ministers.
Ministers get reshuffled in the 5 years of the government, you know, the lifespan. Now, if you want to link a DG to the ministers, you will actually destabilize the department. Understand? Because that minister may be moved by the president using his prerogative in 2 years' time to say, I'm reshuffling cabinet. President Ramaphosa was one person who never reshuffled. This cabinet was never really reshuffled, which some people are saying it's a good thing. I'm saying it's a bad thing because then what if a person is not performing or is not doing well? I know several ministers who were not doing well in the portfolio.
Especially after promising that there will always be performance reviews.
Oh, by the way, you remember he also put the performance review under the carpet. You understand? So that's one of the things that we let as a nation President Ramaphosa to get away with, not the performance reviews. But I disagree with the Democratic Alliance. It will destabilize the country. It will destabilize the departments if the DGs are linked to ministers. And Fresh, if we want good governance and accountability, I think having a DG with a different minister from a different party, different minister from a different deputy minister from a different political party, it will actually make them work and watch each other. It is very easy for comrades or people from one party to connive and cover each other when they do wrong. It will not be easy for a minister of a DA, for example, to go into cows and with a corrupt DG of, for example, the EFF. You understand? It will not be easy if they are from different political parties. They will watch each other. They'll become like the watchdogs.
Sure.
I actually, if I was in a position of power to stabilize the country, if I was President Ramaphosa, I'll do a mixed masala of them. Not that line that the DA want. They want the minister and the deputy minister and the DG. For God's sake, they want to run their own country and own government. That's what they want to do.
Do you know what I suspect they're doing? I think they're playing the long game. For me, I don't think it's about now. I think it's about them wanting to say to the country in 5 years, we ran this department.
Yes.
And this is what we delivered.
That's absolutely.
Now trust us with everything
with
else
everything, yeah.
And vote for us.
They want to demonstrate that where we were absolutely in power or in charge,
we delivered.
You understand? That's I think you're right.
That's what I think.
It's a long term, but I don't think it's healthy for the country, and I don't think we should go that route. But also, you are also interfering with the professionalism of director generals. The government has been crying on the outflow of experts.
Sure.
We have been saying government is losing experts to the private sector, people who are qualified and experienced in administration or finance or whatever. And now you want to go and fiddle with their contracts. They will lose all these DGs, not political deployees, but you also mentioned the deployees. I think the DA was correct when he say there's nothing wrong with deployment of cadres, but let them be qualified for the post.
Sure.
Let them not have also, you know, cases and things that are questionable about their conduct, and we should look at their performance. This thing of what the ANC used to do, when a person fails there, then they move them somewhere. They recycle them within government. You fail there, they move you there. You fail there, they move you there. And that was wrong. And that's where cadre deployment has failed the country. But look, whether we like it or not, political parties will always deploy their comrades and their members into strategic government position. Unfortunately, it's like that.
Absolutely. Do you think they'll find each other? Because this train needs to move. Look, in fact, the train has been moving.
I think these people have found each other.
Sure.
I think they are wasting the nation's, you know, they are putting us into anxiety. They are wasting the state, the nation's time and all that. I think the battle, it is not about the number of ministers and deployees. I think the battle is which ones.
Ah, yes.
You understand? I think the battle is which ones do you want, which ones do we give away and all that. Because remember also, for these political parties, they are going to determine they will give names in to say, if you give us 8 ministries, these are the names. And I think they've submitted that already. Ramaphosa must be sitting with all these sheets from this. But also, I think what the president is going to do, actually, he's even going to appoint ministers. I will not be surprised if Mr. Ramaphosa appoints a minister from the Economic Freedom Fighters. I will not, it won't surprise. The fact that they are for now not in the GNU. I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to give them an olive branch and say, come in, you see, it's a government of national unity. He's going to play that game.
Do you think they'll take it, the EFF?
I think they will, depending what it is. Look, the EFF has been, how do I call it, has been flip-flopping. People say Julius is flip-flopping. I don't think it's the EFF as a whole. I still believe Julius, in the next few hours or days, is going to go into the party. He may not join the GNU, but listen to the language he's using. He's no longer fighting. He's saying...
He's so measured.
I'm going to work with the president. He's a politician now. He's no longer a rebel. You understand? I think they will take it. I think if they're given that position, they will take it. One, they want money. There's money to be a minister. And you know that EFF deployees, they contribute to the party. Two, it may be a political strategy to amass power, to assert yourself. Exactly what you were saying about the DA. They may take that ministry to say, let's show them what we are capable of doing.
Sure.
So on or based on those, you know, points, I think they will accept it. But the ones that I know, they will not accept it. It's some controversies unless the ANC goes and they find themselves. You understand? I heard the spokesperson of MK, the day after they were sworn in, saying, actually, the dream of South Africa is to have the EFF, the ANC, the real ANC. That's why he was very careful saying that. The real ANC coming out and saying, but we are speaking the same language as Umkhonto we party and the EFF. And they will have two-thirds majority.
They have a reunion.
The reunion of the charterists. And he said, that is their dream and that will work for the country. But that's not going to happen.
Sure.
Even if people have been saying, why doesn't the ANC leave the DA with its renting and form government with that fresh? I'm going to be very frank with this. The African National Congress, especially President Cyril Ramaphosa, they are incapable of leaving the DA or leaving white capital out of government business. It's impossible. It will never happen. We can scream and tumble. We can say this makes sense for the black people, for the land, and for it will not happen. And I'll tell you why it will not happen. And the ANC hides behind South Africa belongs to all of them and the Freedom Charter. Guys, white capital has been funding the ANC. From 1953, when the Freedom Charter was drafted, to 1955, when it was adopted, the ANC divorced African nationalism and Pan-Africanism because of white capital. Mm. Understand? The Jews own the ANC. If you go to Kelvin, where is, you know, people don't know that Kelvin is the capital of Jews in Gauteng, a community. They are funding this organization with millions every year. President Ramaphosa is a capitalist. Mm. He is not a member of the white monopoly capital because he's not white, but he's a capitalist, he's a businessman. Those are his colleagues. Mm. He's in business with them. There's no way he's not going to listen to white capital, which owns the DA as well, to leave them out. It's not going to happen. I can guarantee South Africans that we will never wake up in this called leftist political parties are in cahoots with the center ANC and the DA is left out. It's not going to happen. Mm. Look, if it happens, I'll shave my head with a blade, but it will not happen. There's no way the ANC will leave DA. They are forced by the funders. Mm. You know, what do they say in English? The one who pays the bill, the piper something.
Or he who pays the piper calls the tune.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
The DA and all other political parties are funded by 2-3 families. Mm. And they tell them what to do. Money runs politics, nothing else. Not your votes. And I said, not your votes. No. I've told you the last time, the people vote. They don't even elect the president. They don't even elect the MPs. Mm. You just say, I'm voting this political party, and your job ends there.
Sure.
They elect themselves because they determine the list. And then after there are 400 there, they elect the president. Okay, 58 of them were not there. They elected the president. The president goes amongst them again, elects the cabinet. Who are you? Where are the people? And people tell me that this is a constitutional democracy, the democracy of the people. Let's use logic. Hmm. Where is the power of the people? We were told that the power lies on your vote. What did you do with your power? Nothing. Hmm. The same organizations, the same people, they are choosing amongst themselves how they are going to mess up the country. Now we are cruising, we are without ministers for a week. It's okay. They are just deciding who must get which powerful position so that who must have the bigger budget. So this story of the power of the person is on, of the people is on their voting that you do once in 5 years. I'm saying there's no power there. There's no power because right now we dismantle the government. You understand? But they've put it back together. They've put it back together to say, hey, these voters, you know, they're playing with us. We're in charge here.
Sure.
Let's get back together, the gang, and gang up to go and misrule them for the next 5 years. And this is what is happening. This is reality, whether people like it or not. We're back to, you know, I said to people, come the 1st of July, we'll have forgotten all about this, and we'll be cruising again, worried about winter, worried about Durban July, worried about no school uniform, worried about no NFSAS. We'll be back at that. Mm. It is because we have entrusted our lives into the hands of a few corrupt people who do not care. They do not care. Basically, politicians do not care about the people. I still said last week, if they cared, they used half a billion to have a party for 4 hours at the union building while we don't have schools. NFSAS doesn't have money. Mm. And you think those people care? I don't think they care.
And that is Butsang, the cynical Buddhist.
I'm not cynical. I'm being honest.
Let's wrap it up with what's happening, you know, north of the world. North Korea, China, military deals, military drills.
People who play with military nice weapons.
Support.
People play with nice weapons.
It's 2024. You'd think some of these things by now would be things of the past.
Fresh, I think the,
what it feels like? It feels like the Cold War has just evolved.
Yeah. Yes.
But it never stopped.
Yeah. I think you are putting it right. I think it's just evolved. Look, I also think, what do you call them? The nuclear countries, nuclear-owned countries. Mm. I think they've invested trillions, if not zillions of dollars into these nuclear weapons and arms. Mm. And now they are stuck, they've stockpiled. You know, when you've got excess supply of something that you are not even using, you understand? And I think that they're just trying to irritate each other. I mean, a week ago, it was President Putin with your favorite.
Yeah, having a bromance.
Yeah, they were having a bromance, exchanging.
Even bought him a car.
A car and dogs, and yes, a special breed of dogs from North Korea. What is it? King Yongjun.
Yeah.
And it was them, and also signing a military deal between Russia and North Korea to say, my friend, should anybody threaten you or disturb you, I'm a call away.
I've got your back.
I've got your back. Few days after, it's the United States of America, Japan, and South Korea, and you know the battle between the North and the South is a very sensitive issue. They go on a military drill in the South Pacific and all that. Now my concern about that is this is happening at the back of what is happening in Gaza in the Middle East. The same United States of America that actually always jumps up like a little a girl when other countries go into military drills. They had a problem when South Africa had a military drill with Russia about 2 years ago. You know, when, you remember when Lady R was here?
Yes.
They had a problem with that. But they have a nerve, the Americans, to go and have a military drill with South Korea, knowing the tensions between the two Koreas. And then you find the puppet of the US, Japan, getting into that nonsense as well. And I don't understand why would the Japanese, you know, are they forgetting the history of how America actually dropped, you know, the Hiroshima, destroyed Japan because of all these things, the nuclear weapons, the nuclear bomb. And as you are saying, it looks like they want to revisit the Cold War. But I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I've just mentioned the Middle East now. In the middle of this whole thing, and the war continues in Gaza and the Middle East. And you know, something came into my mind this week. I've got a friend that works very closely with the Russians and is always on RT. And we exchanged a lot of notes,
sure,
you know, throughout the, and one of the things about 2 months back when Turkey stood up and imposed sanctions on Israel, I was like, good, Turkey, because of the relationship between Turkey and Russia. I said, good. At least some countries in the Middle East are moving. You know, that guy said to me, and I would not mention his name, he said to me, don't get too excited. President Putin doesn't trust the Turks. And I'm like, why? They looked to me. I said, no, he doesn't trust them, actually. He's very cautious. And he said to me, I'll tell you one day. And this week he writes to me, he said, did you see what your friends did? And I'm like, yeah, I saw. Turkey has taken over as the number one aid, a humanitarian aid in Gaza. Britain, again, this is also strange. The United Kingdom has been number one aid in Gaza. And ask yourself why, Fresh. The UK, which is an ally of Israel and America, has been the number one provider of humanitarian aid. Now Turkey has taken over as number one, you know, for dropping food and water and humanitarian medicines there. But I came across something, I said, but this is very strange. Do you know that the pipeline that supplies oil and fuel, jet fuel, they call jet fuel and everything to Israel, it runs through Turkey from Uzbekistan or whatever country that's supplying Israel with oil. The entire part of it crosses throughout Turkey into Israel. Now, if you are Turkey and you are saying to Israel, we agree with South Africa, what you are doing in Gaza is inhuman and unjust. But the pipeline that fuels the jets that are bombing Gaza is crossing through Turkey. Why doesn't Turkey cut that pipeline?
I was going to say, are you saying switch it off then?
Yes, switch it off. Cut it off. Let Israel not have fuel to kill the children of Palestine.
Yeah, but you could argue it that every country has relationships that even if I may speak out against Botswana, it doesn't mean I'm going to stop providing citrus products to Botswana.
Okay.
I might call you out or as a grandstanding a gesture of sorts, but it doesn't mean I'm going to stop doing business with you because it's still bread and butter.
Okay, but now this is not business. This is now I'm being specific. I'm talking about jet fuel and oil that the Israelis are using to manufacture bombs, to fly aeroplanes, to kill the people. If my interest is not just to grandstand the nyere nyere, I cut the fuel so that you can't fly the plane. Then it will alleviate me spending money in bringing foreign aid, a food aid. Actually, Turkey was supposed to divert that fuel to go to Palestine. Understand? If they were serious about this thing. So, again, I don't think the world cares about Palestine. I don't think the world is against Israel killing the people of Palestine. And Turkey itself as a country, it's actually very disappointing that they still allow, and even if they don't cut the, as you said, Get engineers to shut it off. Let the oil not move. Let Israel go dry on jet fuel and oil and all that. And let's see what happens. But again, I don't know why people will say I'm inciting violence. I must be very careful with what I don't know why countries like Hamas, not countries, organizations like Hamas, don't they bomb that oil thing? Why do you go and bomb people and kill people when you can actually
stop the pipeline?
Understand? I mean, the world is insane, and I don't think the world cares about human beings.
But I've been saying this to you for how long, Botsang? That one,
yeah.
Israel has not given a damn.
You have said it many times. Yeah.
Since after World War II.
Yeah.
Palestine have been on their own since the exact same period of time. The United Nations have been toothless since exactly that. Nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Nothing
yeah.
has changed over more than 50, 60, 70 years yeah. even.
And that's the sad reality. You know, we screamed, we went to the ICC, we spent billions on case. Mm. We are not talking to some of our families and political friends because they are on the side of Israel. And all because of, when you look at this whole picture, the world does not care about the people of Palestine. And here you ask yourself, Fresh, what did they do to deserve this? Mm. They are like South Africans. You know, what did the people of Palestine do to be where they are? They were nice to welcome settlers. You understand? Mm. They were now, because that's what happened, if you recall historically, when the Jews were running away and they were settled, they were looking for, that's why they were Jewish settlers. They, and the Palestinians, you know, were nice to them to say, come and live with us as human beings because Hitler is busy with you there. You understand? And that's the mistake they did. The same thing we did as South Africans. The same people in the southern tip of this continent welcomed the Jan van Riebecks and the Bartholomew Dyers into this country. They didn't know that they'll end up killing them, raping them, and taking off their land. And today we are still struggling and arguing about land ownership because the Bantu and the San people of Southern Africa were nice to
these men in tights.
To these men in tights. I don't know if those pictures are real, but yeah, they were nice. And these people were, you know, I was thinking today to say our forefathers were really nice, if not naive. These people were even dying of scurvy. They saved their lives. They used the herbs from the Northern Cape and the rooibos to cure them. And the next thing after you cure a person, they kill you. It's like they're snakes. You understand? That's why how do you go and you heal a snake or a lion that is being injured? And, you know, a barbed wire has caught a lion. And you go say, shame, a lion, let me remove that barbed wire. And then I'll heal you. And when the wound heals, the lion is hungry, it's going to eat you. And that's what colonial settlers did to this continent and to the Middle East.
The moral of the story is the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah.
And that if nothing changes, nothing changes. So we'll be back here again next week with the exact same complaints because nothing is going to change.
Fresh, I hope, let's hope when we are here next week, we'll have cabinet. Look, for my own selfish reasons, I really need the cabinet. It has a direct impact on my life.
Oh, yes, it does.
Absolute impact.
But we'll explain why once the impact has been...
Yes, after the impact has happened, I'm going to talk. It has a direct impact on my life. If there's one person who is going to lose or absolutely benefit with the cabinet announcement, it's me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in a non-corrupt way, guys.
No, spreading rumors. I won't even get money. I'm not going to get... But it has a technical impact on my personal life.
Absolutely. But Botsang, as always, incredible chat.
Thanks, my brother. Thanks.
Opening our minds and our eyes. So a shout out to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Fresh. And thanks to you. I mean, you engage me. You get me thinking and working and informing myself. But also the followers and the viewers of Hashtag Politics on Wow What a Week platform. You know, I engage with them a lot on their comments. I like the comments, but they suggest some topics. They engage and it really helps.
Sure. So please subscribe. Please share the link. Share with friends and family or anyone around the world that you think might be interested in politics from a Botsang Moyilwa perspective. Where do we find you on social media?
BotsangM@gmail.com and I'm on 082-485-9100 on WhatsApp as well as on, what do you call it, X and Twitter or whatever, IG, it's at Botsang M.
Ladies and gentlemen, another installment of Hashtag Politics with Botsang Modimo Amemuilwa. We do this again next week. We do this from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out Pezulu Works for the amazing cinematography. Shout out to Otis the Floor Fraser for all of our imaging. And shout out to our show executive producer, Keletso Muntisakeng. Until next week, have a wild week in spite of yourselves.